Introducing Coco Gauff's signature shoe, more than just a tennis shoe. It's a fusion of 90s-inspired style and cutting-edge performance technology. With its sleek mid-cut silhouette, it's designed to enhance speed and power on the court. The multi-piece upper construction delivers high-energy return for players of all levels. Whether you're a seasoned pro or just starting out, the Coco CG1 empowers you to dominate the game. Learn more and purchase the Coco CG1 at NewBalance.com.
TC Live with you on a Friday afternoon here in the States, Friday evening in Monte Carlo. We have taken our first steps down the road to Roland Garros, which means we've got some stubborn orange stains on our shoes and socks. And we've gotten our first look at who plans to contend in Paris next month. Coming up on the show, all eight quarterfinalists in the Principality were seeded today. We'll show you who emerged on this drama-filled Friday. The Billie Jean King Cup qualifiers kicked off today with all manner of major champions playing for their countries. And Team USA plays in Orlando tonight. And you probably remember that Coco Gauff made her Wimbledon debut against Venus Williams a few years ago. But wait till you see how much farther back than that their story extends. All that and more on the way as we say hi to you, TC Live on the air on this Friday. So glad you're with us, with Paul Anacone here in the studio and Andy Roddick at the home office. I'm Brett Haber, and it's my understanding that Andy would like to begin today's show by singing a rap that he has composed especially for this occasion. Andy, the floor is yours.
I will no longer comment on anyone rapping at any moment in time. Apparently, I love the mama bear instinct of Lindsay Davenport. I got a text this morning saying, "Don't you dare make fun of Emma Navarro's rap game." Message heard loud and clear. I was told that I was harsh by saying that I liked her tennis game more than I liked her rapping. I take it all back. I love her rapping. I'm going to buy every album. Please give us that album immediately. I do not want to be on Lindsay's bad side.
No.
I have avoided it. I have avoided it for many years. I'm sorry. I will never joke again during our rundown of funny internet things.
I've never heard Andy so contrite and tail between the legs. But it is true, right? She plays tennis better than she does everything.
Well, she does. But I'll tell you what. First of all, I would never have the guts be able to do that, nor would I have the wit or the vocabulary to do it. But I blame the teammates anyway.
Really? Oh, because they put her up to it because it's a rookie thing.
She did great, but she's got more important things to worry about this weekend.
She was better than Shapovalov. I mean, that's a pretty low bar, I suppose. Let's dive right into our Monte Carlo quarterfinals, shall we? And for Stefanos Tsitsipas, he was back in his happy place. Of course, he won back-to-back titles in Monte, 21 and 22. Beat Rublev the first time, Davidovich Fokina the second time. Today, he would come up against a guy who has never made a clay court final in his career. Corinne Khachanov has made eight finals, Andy, all of them on hard courts, though he has made a couple of Roland Garros quarterfinals, so he can play on this stuff.
I assume Steph going to Monte Carlo is the same when I used to go from Roland Garros over to the grass. It's a happy day in my year, and Steph is playing like it right now. The artistry on full display. That's the most middle I've ever seen a passing shot hit in my life, Brett. But all the same, Steph looked great. He is so much better when he can kind of lean back and create a little bit of height on the forehand, but especially on that backhand, hitting that fadeaway, finding some height, and people can't take it as early on the clay, dictating with the forehand. You can see he was committed to coming in before he even hit that shot. Forehand in full flight, and you'll see later in this highlight that he's just taking it to him. I mean, it was just fantastic. 4-2, cruising. It only gets tougher from here, Brett.
All right, 16th Masters 1000 semi for Tsitsipas, his third in Monte Carlo. Here he is.
What made you so effective today?
Well, my returns for sure were effective, and I was generating a lot of pace and gained some good momentum at some point. You know, he seemed good, well composed in his tennis. You know, he wasn't giving away too many offers there, and you know, seemed pretty calm from behind the baseline. I tried to do my part, which was to press as much as I could, you know, and not rush myself too much into the rally. So I was trying to predict and read certain things on court. It worked out pretty well.
Yes, it did. Second quarterfinal was a rematch from last year in Monte Carlo. This was a semifinal a year ago. Holger Rune lost the first set to Jannik Sinner 6-1, but then turned around to win in three, part of a monster clay season for Rune last year. And so we fast forward to the rematch today. Obviously, Sinner, a different player 12 months later, and Andy Rune, he had to play twice yesterday, so he was fatigued.
Yeah, and the buildup of matches with him has been an issue in the past. And Sinner opened up like almost every other match in 2024, just straight to the point, getting that early break, establishing a hold after hold. But in the second set, Brett, stuff got a little weird. He's chirping. This warning that was given, I don't know that I've ever seen a warning given for less in my entire life. But also, Sinner reacting to it is fine.
So
at this point, he calls the supervisor, which I don't even know why we do this, because they never do anything anyways. But I probably wouldn't have called the supervisor, but I would have been upset about getting the warning. It was pretty useless. Anyways, eventually, about 6 hours later, we got back to the coverage, Brett. And Rune, this might have actually worked for him a little bit. You can see the little cheeky smile after he was getting into it with the crowd. And may have thrown Sinner off a little bit. If you can't beat him, change the atmosphere. And Rune certainly did that. And credit to him for really digging in. He had a long day yesterday. You mentioned the 4.5 hours on court. Not easy to come back. The guy is not scared of a street fight, and he's also not scared to go up against the best players in the world. Average shot selection here that we're about to see. Drop shots look so good when they work, and they look so bad when they don't. Sinner is definitely matched up. You see, going for the big second serve, which he had done repeatedly throughout the day. Sinner moving on. It was full of drama. Same result as a lot of the rest of 2024 for Jannik Sinner.
Just 14 unforced errors for Sinner in three sets. Rune committed 38 of them as he exits the scene. So how about this for Sinner? You like his season? 25-1 on the year. He becomes the seventh man in the Open era to start a season by winning 25 of his first 26 matches. Pretty good company, as you can see on this list, with Connors and Borg and Lendl and Mack and Novak and Roger. And he spoke with Prakash when it was over.
How brutally difficult was it after losing that second to mentally prep in the third?
Yeah, it was very tough, especially on the mental side. But, these are great chances to show some great fighting spirits also, because, I had twice love 40 in the second set. Then I had two match points, couldn't use them. But, this is the sport. Sometimes you have these chances and cannot use them, but it has to go on. Third set, you start again from 0-0. You have to stay in the present moment, which I've done, so I'm very happy about that. And let's see what's coming tomorrow.
He is so mentally tough. He has been so impossible to beat since Wimbledon last summer. Interestingly about Rune, do you remember last year when he said rather boldly that he and Sinner and Alcaraz were going to be the next big three in men's tennis? Certainly admire his confidence in saying that. But, Paul, what's the difference between Rune? What does he have to do to catch up to those guys?
Well, look, he's getting close, and I'm not sure I would put anyone in the same sentence as the big three as we've seen for the last couple of decades. So there's a lot of work to be done. Clearly, those three are playing some terrific tennis. But for Rune, look, I think he's thereabouts, right? He's right there. He's been in the top 10 for a long time now. He's going to slide outside the top 10 after this loss today. Very athletic, can come forward. I actually think what makes him so unique on the clay, he's one of the best forward movers on clay, and that's when he plays his best tennis. When he just stays in lateral tennis, he's a little bit more vulnerable. As Andy said, loves a street fight, great competitor, comes up with great shots when he's down. I worry about the amount of energy he spends on stuff he can't control, like calling a supervisor out on the court at 5-all, love 30 in the middle of a game on your serve is a little bit strange to me. It did work. He's a little like Novak sometimes, though, in irreverence, right? Because he then starts to get jacked up when he gets a little bit irreverent, and it works for him.
Andy?
Yeah, I kind of agree with everything that Paul said. One of the things with Rune is there has been
a lot of turnover and churn in his team, right? Where a center makes the move a couple of years ago, Cahill settles in, works with the rest of his team, does a great job. And we're seeing kind of those results proven, but not right away. This is a process, right? It's 2 years later, fixing the serve, making the adjustments. And now the differences exist at the margins, right? Just less unforced errors. You said it, Brett, 14 errors versus 38 errors, but that's like every day for center now. That's not an exception to the rule. You know, Runa's going to have to learn how to kind of use that energy appropriately. I was someone who ran hot, who ran stressed on the court. You didn't really have to worry about what I was thinking. I also had the ability to make a mountain out of a molehill. And later in my career, you kind of have to figure out the pacing, when it's the right time to do it, almost do the McEnroe school of strategically getting upset a little bit more, which is something he'll learn over time, I'm sure.
Yeah, he's going to have to learn how to make being upset work for him the way McEnroe did. But I think your point about his team is such a good one. Becker and Severin Luti and Kenneth Carlson, and now a third stint with Mouratoglou. We'll see if he can find some stability in the people around him. Let's dive into the late two quarterfinals now. And the last time we saw Novak Djokovic and Alex De Minaur on court was at United Cup back in January. De Minaur clipped the world number one. It was one of three top 10 wins that he claimed that week, propelled him into the top 10 for the first time in his career. But Novak is a guy who keeps receipts. He got his payback against Musetti yesterday and today. Paul, it was Demon's turn.
Yeah, he has receipts. I like that expression. That's perfect, Brett. This was what I would call an interesting match. You have two of the quicker people that have played the game, and you have a lot of counterpunching and a lot of fear in your shot making because the guys move so well. Well, guess what? This fear turned out to be a little bit strange for both players. That was just a little mishap. No ankle injury there. Just kind of fell on the court. But for both guys, wasn't a high level of tennis, and there's a bad shot selection decision on set point that costs De Minaur the first set. Second set was scrappy. I think there was 27 breaks of serve in a row, and the guys were really struggling. For great players to struggle like this is strange. And talk about struggling, Novak looked a little bit strange in terms of fatigue, lost his breath a ton, and he was doing that from the beginning of the match, from really fifth game on. But what does Novak generally do when that happens? Nothing. He has some bending over, some deep breaths, and he finds ways to persevere, and he finds ways to get over the finish line. That was break number 27 right there, actually. Novak was frustrated, but he was more fatigued. And that's what concerned me more than anything, is Novak's kind of physical condition on the court. I don't know if he was ill or just a little bit tired, but the match wasn't that long. And it wasn't that good for both players, but Novak was better than the other guy, and that's all that matters on the day.
Eight breaks in the match, seven in the second set. We'll get back to his physical condition in a second, but we got to do this one, the match you saw just before we came on. Rude and Humbert, as the number one freshman, had the crowd behind him but couldn't come across the line.
He did. It was high level of tennis, and we saw Casper Rude torque a few forehands in the first set that set the tone early, really did a nice job, got the insurance break to seal that first set, then went up 2-0 in the second set, and give Humbert credit, did not flinch. From 2-0 down, he won four games in a row to go up 4-2. The confidence of winning two titles this year, albeit on hard courts, definitely propelled him into that match, got him through the second set, took an eight-minute break after the second set, which is one of my least favorite things to do after you win a set. And then right away, Rude jumped on him at the beginning of the third, got a break, used the frying pan reply there, did Humbert to stay in that point. But Casper Rude gets the insurance break and again has to battle here in the 5-1 game, but does a nice job getting across the finish line. Casper Rude did a terrific job. That match could have gotten away from him. The crowd was really, really pro Humbert.
Humbert barely won half of his first serve points in this match. Rude broke him five times as the Frenchman exits on what is technically French soil at the Monte Carlo Country Club. So here's the semifinal draw. That bottom match will be first tomorrow. Tsitsipas against Sinner, episode number 9. And then Djokovic against Rude, episode number 6. All five so far have gone Novak's way. We'll dig into those matchups a little bit later in the show. But Andy, we want to circle back to what we saw from Novak today, the physical distress, at least what seemed to be all manner of physical distress for the second match in a row. What'd you make of that?
We don't know is the answer. And Paul and I have been texting all day, kind of throwing out different theories of it. And at the end of the day, they asked him about it afterwards on court, and he wasn't very forthcoming. So is it lack of match play? Is it just being 37 all of a sudden? I mean, that will happen at some point. He's fought it off better than almost anyone in history. There's never been a world number one at 37. Is it switching surfaces? But this is scary stuff. You see him bending over. It almost looks like he's going to fall over. You see the ice. The guy's proven in long matches, obviously, maybe as proven as anyone in history. How much of it is mental fatigue? How much of it is physical fatigue? He seemed fine afterwards. He took a while to get to press after the match. I'm guessing he's not going to tell us anything this week. So I think we're going to be left guessing.
Yeah, it's interesting to watch. Yesterday we saw him on the changeover with his hand shaking, which was something really difficult to watch. Today it was more scenes like this where the towel is over his head, a lot of bending over. You know, 37 years of age, lack of matches, lack of tournaments this year, lack of physical training, mental fatigue, physical fatigue. You know, it's probably a little bit of all of those things, but it's just incredible how the guy still finds ways to get over the finish line no matter what's happening. And I think he likes to play himself into shape. Perhaps that's one of the themes that he's working on, and that's why he's going to have a pretty full clay court season. But to me, it's a little alarming. Look, it was only 70 degrees, guys, today. It wasn't 110 Washington, D.C. heat. It was 70 degrees.
Now, all of that said, we are still 6 weeks away from Roland Garros. And, Andy, I wonder if you draw any straight lines from the fact that Novak is not in peak form today to what he might be capable of in Paris. We've seen him turn it on pretty quick.
Yeah, it just depends if there's some sort of underlying issue that we don't know about. I mean, it could be something as simple as, like, I mean, it'd be surprising because he lives there, but is there an allergy or something? You see some people get on grass and they can't breathe because of it. I don't think there's anything. We probably would have heard of it 20 years later. But by now, I'm not worried if it's just a fitness issue. He is going to find a way to navigate. He doesn't look like he's out of shape movement wise. It looks like he's moving fine. It's just he's having a hard time recovering between points. But I don't often worry about Novak Djokovic and what he's doing on a tennis court.
Yeah, you and me both, right? Okay. It's amazing. There's plenty of time before Roland Garros, and I think he does like to play himself into shape. And as Andy said, unless there's something underlying wrong, he'll play himself into shape. It's always just disconcerting when you see an athlete go through stuff like this, particularly a couple days in a row where he hasn't looked great on court.
Let the record show that last year he didn't play either Indian Wells or Miami because he still wasn't allowed into America, and he didn't play Madrid either because of the elbow, and he won Roland Garros.
There you
so
go.
Maybe we shouldn't get too worried. We've got lots more to get to on TC Live on this Friday. We'll see which nations got off to a strong start in the Billie Jean King Cup qualifiers. Plus, the early reviews are in. Hear what Team USA has to say about their new captain. I believe it's pronounced Davenport. Back in a moment.
Introducing Coco Gauff's signature shoe, more than just a tennis shoe. It's a fusion of 90s-inspired style and cutting-edge performance technology. With its sleek mid-cut silhouette, it's designed to enhance speed and power on the court. The multi-piece upper construction delivers high-energy return for players of all levels. Whether you're a seasoned pro or just starting out, the Coco CG1 empowers you to dominate the game. Learn more and purchase the Coco CG1 at newbalance.com.
Looking ahead to next week on Tennis Channel, Road to Roland Garros continues with the men in Barcelona. There's Alcaraz winning it last year and observing the tradition of the champions leap into the swimming pool at the Real Club. Coverage begins Monday, 5 a.m. Eastern. Andy, you never won Barcelona, but you did win Houston three times where they also jump in the pool. Did you stick the triple Indy when you won that?
I think they made that tradition up after I was gone, Brett. I was going to win Barcelona, but it turns out I'm not very good on clay.
It's just, if not for that one little thing, you would have jumped in the pool.
Details,
I know. All right, we'll see who dives in the pool next weekend, but let's show you some of the big names who played for their countries today. Day one of the Billie Jean King Cup qualifiers in Switzerland. World number one, Iga Świątek, leading Team Poland against the Swiss and Simona Walters.
Yes, indeed. In Switzerland we go, and for Iga Świątek, she's on the indoor courts here. A little bit of a jumpy first set for her, and for her to lose three games in a set, that's really jumpy, right?
Mental.
It's a, you know, that's one of the things also playing in a team environment where you represent your country, never an easy thing, especially in one of the first matches in doing so. But Świątek's playing such good tennis. Once she got through the first set, it was just typical Iga, power baseline tennis, big forehands, rushing the net when she had to, and off she goes for a nice start, getting that victory 1-0 for Polska.
They actually lead it 2-0 now. Iga saves 6 of 7 break points, improves to 10-3, lifetime Billie Jean King Cup. Meanwhile, in Tokyo, Naomi Osaka joining up with Team Japan as they hosted the Kazakhs, Yulia Putintseva, Andy, drawing Osaka.
You know what I love right now, Britt, is the normalcy of Osaka being back on a tennis court and playing in these moments again. I just love it. And she's finding her range. She's starting to stick these up-the-line winners. That is the special potion, the ability to drive it up the line to the corners, even against her opponent's movement sometimes. She is back full flight. There's another one that she sticks line deep. I don't know how you defend that. I wouldn't want to defend that. Sticking that first serve. Hey, listen, one more while we're here, Brent. Osaka looking great. Good to see her back on the tennis court, and she's building. She's going to do something big very soon, Brent.
Well, remember that you said that. Had 15 aces today as she appears in Billie Jean King Cup for the first time since 2021, and now Hibino won her match as well, so Japan leads 2-0. 8 qualifier ties in action tomorrow. Here's how you can watch them. USA Belgium will be on Tennis Channel starting at 2 p.m. Eastern. Switzerland, Poland, and Ukraine, Romania will be on T2 starting at 7 a.m. Remember that Ukraine tie is taking place at Amelia Island because of the war in Ukraine. And France, Great Britain, and Brazil, Germany will be on TC Plus. We've got you covered all over the globe. Much more to come on the program. How is it that Coco Gauff and Venus Williams were together 11 years ago when Coco was 9? You'll see it with your own eyes. Come on.
The 2024 Billie Jean King Cup competition kicks off. Team USA taking on Belgium.
Lindsay Davenport's first tie as the Billie Jean King Cup captain. We've got Jess Pegula, Maddie Keyes, Emma Navarro, Caroline Dollahide, and Taylor Townsend.
Camaraderie, that's really what I was going for. A great team spirit, ladies who are working hard and really want to represent their country.
It is memories for these women that they're never going to forget, and it would be a great way to start with a nice W.
All right, that's the sizzle to get you psyched up for tonight's action in Orlando. U.S. hosting Belgium, world number 5, Jesse Pegula leads things off for the Americans. Then Emma Navarro makes her debut for Team USA. It all begins 6 p.m. Eastern. Of course, Lindsay Davenport making her captain's debut for the home team. And the ladies seem to be jazzed to have her.
Oh, I have no advice. She's killing it.
Well, we just practiced out here, and we were doing two-on-ones. She was covering one side of the court, and I think she needs to improve her footwork a little bit.
She knows what to do. I would just say trust her instincts. I feel like she's, yeah, doesn't need to overthink it. Just go instinctually to whatever she's feeling, because I think she already knows what to do.
Lindsay's awesome, and I think that she kind of like fits right into this role because she's a player. She was a past player, so, and she's done it. She's played on the Fed Cup team, played on the Billie Jean King Cup team, so she knows what this is like from, you know, being on the court. So I think that she's able to really bring unique experiences and a perspective.
Mm-hmm. You know, these ladies are amazing, and I adore each and every one of them. It's been actually a huge privilege to be able to work with them. I look at this as hopefully a year-round job, not just a week or two every year.
If you know Lindsay, you know how much she loves talking about herself and listening to other people talk about her. That was, I know, a cringe for her. Talk to me about what happens in the team room. Paul, you've played Davis Cup. You've been a leader of British Davis Cup. Andy, you played incessantly for Team USA. We hear a lot about that chemistry. How important, Andy, is it? What goes on during that week?
Just shared experience. I think the most common source of bonding is shared experience. And I was lucky enough to have great teammates. I actually have Bob and Mike. We shot a podcast for this week. They told hilarious stories, but like the brotherhood doesn't leave. You know, we can go months without checking in, and you see each other and you fall kind of right back in to your own habits. And when it's as simple as like, I have your back, you have my back, We're going after this unified goal together. It kind of bleeds into the rest of the year, too. And Lindsay's going to be a great captain. She has a skill set, a knowledge base that exceeds most of us dummies. But yet there's a humility involved with most of us don't have to the level of what she does. And we should. And I'm also scared to say anything because then Lindsay's going to yell at me
again.
Now, look, I mean, I think the biggest thing about these team scenarios is as individual athletes, we don't get to do them. And because we don't do them very much, it's so precious. And it really makes us feel much more tied into the people that are on our teams with us. And Andy talks about being in the team room and bonds that don't dissipate. Well, it doesn't dissipate. And like I said, magnified because of individual athletes. You know you're there for yourself. You're there for your friends. And in these situations, you're there for the country. And as far as Lindsay's concerned, as much as she cringes to talk about herself, she's got a couple things, more than a couple things, that are amazing. She has the credentials as a player. Mm-hmm. She's got humility. She's got class. And she's got the ability to communicate and relate in a way that everyone can deal with. So those things are going to be invaluable for all the women that are on the team with her and everybody that's involved. And it'll be experience for a lifetime for everybody.
Andy, wrapping aside, what's the coolest or weirdest or most uncomfortable rookie indoctrination / hazing you ever witnessed?
Don't bait me into getting in trouble, Brett. I don't appreciate that. I actually love the pranks. I feel like it's a space where people become very human, very embarrassed. You can joke about it, or at least you could. And, you know, it's such a bonding thing. We used to do speeches, and then the practice partners kind of got smart to speeches, and they came in and they were, I remember Amir Delek was the first one. He was a little too academic with it. So then we started giving the practice players three or four words that were probably unsavory that they had to implement into the speech. And this is a speech in front of, you know, a bunch of student ties, but it's all that shared experience. All of a sudden I see your personality. You see my personality. We're closer because of it. Not everyone else knows what's going on, and that's funny in its own right. So I think these types of things are important and should be taken, with a grain of salt and with some humor.
Yeah, I mean, all of it is rituals, right? It's rituals about bonding generally, and all the stuff for the rookies is about them making them feel uncomfortable so that they can become one of us, so to speak. So you do it in good fun. You do it with tongue in cheek, and most of all, you do it in a way that really unites everybody, and that's why the week's so fun.
In the immortal words of Jordan Belfort, Google gobble one of us, Google gobble one of us. Let's show you the social net for this Friday. Coco Gauff not playing this week, but she is in the news. Of course, you remember 5 years ago that she made her Wimbledon debut by playing and beating Venus Williams, one of her heroes. Well, it turns out that they were together long before that. An eagle-eyed Twitter user picked out this photo of the 2012 U.S. Open, Venus sitting in her chair. Look who's over her shoulder. That's 9-year-old Coco Gauff, Paul.
That is unbelievable. I saw this morning, and I could not believe that someone actually found this. This might be the most priceless thing that's ever been shown on the worldwide interweb.
And Coco also saw it yesterday when it came out and had roughly the same reaction that we all did, which was, wow, wow, wow. Who found this? How did you find this? It's pretty cool.
Yeah, this is fantastic. Listen, we're all inspired by our tennis heroes. I remember the first time I got to be around Andre and Pete, I could barely speak, which if you know me, it's normally not an issue. And I was so scared of my... but also inspired because I got to see my heroes play in person also. It's almost a rite of passage. You watch it, then you want to do it, and then you play against them. And I get goosebumps talking about it because it's such a special shared experience.
And our apologies to Bethany Maddox Sands, who was down a set and a break in that match, and that's now frozen in time forever. A reminder, as we look ahead to Tennis Channel's coverage tomorrow, we start with the Monte Carlo semifinals beginning at 7:30 a.m. Eastern. We'll have another edition of TC Live following those two matches. Then we segue to the Billie Jean King Cup coverage from Orlando and around the world. Back with more on TC Live in just a moment.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hot shot of the day belongs to Emma Raducanu in the France-Britain tie, taking on Caroline Garcia, Andy.
Yeah, and Raducanu a little bit hurt. And as soon as you see this right leg go across, you think there's no way that she can go cross court. When Paula Anacone was chipping and charging right about here, and he saw that right leg go across, he's going, there's no way that they can go cross court. Raducanu says, you know what, Paul? I might have passed you once or twice. I have that shot.
Only once or twice?
Raducanu won that match. The tie is even, 1-1. Looking ahead to tomorrow in Monte Carlo, our featured matches start at 7:30 a.m. Eastern, the two semifinals. Tsitsipas, Sinner, Djokovic, Ruud. Our team on the ground is Danny Cluppinger and Prakash Amitraj. They've got a preview.
Alrighty, back here at our Tennis Channel FanDuel desk. Prakash, we've reached semifinal Saturday, and we're going to see Jannik Sinner and Stefanos Tsitsipas, two players that have been playing fantastic tennis, especially here in Monaco. Who do you give the edge to?
It'll be a real treat. I think they've been playing the best among anyone here at the event. 5-3 head-to-head for Steph, 3-1 on clay. Sinner's obviously been playing the best of anyone this year, but I think it's pretty close. Maybe even a 60-40, 55-45 edge for Sinner. I think Steph's got a really good shot today.
Ooh, it's just coming down to
minor edge for the Italian.
Teeniest of edges here. Look, it's going to be a fantastic semifinal Saturday, and we're looking forward to it.
All right, let's keep that conversation going, Andy. Obviously, Sinner has been the best player on the planet for the last 6 months or so, but he doesn't have the clay court credentials that Tsitsipas has. How do you see that one playing out?
I was saying something similar at the beginning of the week, Brett. I was also the guy at the beginning of the year saying, you know what, he had his hot run, it was indoors. Let's see what happens when he gets to Australia. Oh, he hadn't had enough tournament play before Australia. I don't know if that's a good call. I don't know if he can translate to clay. We'll see. He's done all of it. I've been a dummy the entire way. I will not bet against Sinner right now with this run of form. It's going to be interesting to see if Tsitsipas can get out of his zone. But the only problem is Sinner's zone goes from his shoe tops to above his head right now. So we'll see how it shakes out.
Yeah, look, I think it's really important for Steph to serve incredibly well. He's got to make a lot of first serves, and he's got to find a way to get into the rallies early on, because if he doesn't, I think Jannik's going to find that backhand corner, and if he does that, he's going to put a lot of pressure with weight of shot off of both of his wings. Sinner's been the best player on the planet now for about 4.5, 5 months, maybe longer than 5 months, and I give Sinner a 70-30 advantage in this match.
Interesting. Tsitsipas leads the head-to-head 5-3, but Sinner has won the last two. Let's also look ahead to the opener in Orlando tonight. Jesse Pegula for Team USA taking on Belgium's Sofia Kostoulis. Paul, Belgium without Elisa Mertens, without Griet Minnen, without Janina Wickmeyer, pretty massive favorites.
Yeah, I'm going to go way out on a limb here, and I'm going to favor Jesse Pegula in this match. I just think the odds are too tough. It's just too tough for the Belgians to play at this level away against players like Jess, and the rest of the team is just loaded for Lindsay. So I think it's a big ask for Team Belgium, and I think that they're going to come in second place.
Makes sense
to
me.
I think the exact same thing. Like, Jess Pegula actually made more progress than you would think in Miami, in Charleston, made the semis. She found the matches. This will be runaway traffic, I think.
All right, we'll see. 6 p.m. Eastern tonight, live coverage of the Billie Jean King Cup here on Tennis Channel. Mark Pecci and Coco Vandeweghe will have the action for you. Until then, for Paul and Andy and our entire Tennis Channel team, I'm Brett Haber. Enjoy the national action, and we'll see you tomorrow for day 6 in Monte Carlo. Are Sinner and Djokovic on a collision course for the final on the men's?